You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
Packers Talk.
Believe it or not, Sunday's matchup between the Green Bay Packers and Pittsburgh Steelers was the first time legendary quarterbacks Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger had faced off since Super Bowl 45 way back in 2011. And although almost everything has changed since that day in Arlington over 10 years ago, the end result Sunday was still the same. Advantage, Rodgers. And with that, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Lemps Talk and Pack. I'm your host, Chris Lempsis, coming to you once again from my basement Packer room in my home in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here to break down Green Bay's solid B, maybe a B+, but dear God, when will these injuries end? 27-17 win over the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday at Lambeau Field. So this one was a Milwaukee game for the Gold Package season ticket holders. A game that also saw a whole bunch of members from the 1996-97 Super Bowl championship team in attendance, as the Packers were celebrating the 25th anniversary of that legendary season on Alumni Weekend. It's crazy, you know. That's obviously been a thing people have been talking about this week. Once it was announced they were going to bring most of that team was there. Almost all of them were there for the game Sunday. And a lot of people, you know, start talking about memories from that season. It's crazy that was 25 years ago. Like, in some ways it feels like it was just yesterday. In a lot of ways it does feel like, yeah, no, it was 25 years ago. I mean, I was a freshman in high school, you know. That shit wasn't yesterday. I can confirm that. So yeah, it's crazy, you know. But it was great to see. It was cool to see. I know Leroy Butler, if you follow him on Twitter, he was putting out a lot of photos last night. They had some sort of big group get together. I'm not sure where it was, but he posted one photo of all the DBs. It was, you know, it was him and Craig Newsome and Doug Evans and Eugene Robinson and Mike Pryor and all those guys. There was one photo he put up of the wide receivers. It was, so you had Freeman in there, Bad Moon Rising, Andre Rison was in there. For some reason, Jim McMahon snuck his way into that photograph. I'm like, what are you doing? I think this is a wide receiver photo, Jim. I don't know why you're in here. But yeah, it was really cool to see all that. That was, what a season, huh? For anybody, I know some of the younger listeners are going to be like, I don't remember that year. What the fuck was that? But if you lived through that year, I mean, what, that was one of the greatest football single season NFL teams of all time, right? Number one offense, number one defense, number one special teams, I think, according to, can't think of the gentleman from the Dallas Morning News that does the special teams rankings every year. I think he had them, because there's no like official number. There's no official special teams rankings, right? As far as I know, I don't think there are. I think they were just going off that, his thing, which is kind of considered the gold standard for that. So yeah, number one offense, number one defense, number one special teams. People kind of forget about it because they were, you know, it was just that one year. It wasn't like the start of a great championship. It should have been. That's another story for another day, but people forget about it, I think, because it was just a one-year team. And I think one of the things, if you allow me to go off on this tangent quick, one of the things I think has always hurt that team historically is that they weren't, like, loaded with Hall of Fame players. You think about those Niners teams or the Cowboys teams or the, you know, from the 90s, the Cowboys, the 80s Niners, the 70s Steelers. Like, that team, as of now, only has two Hall of Famers and, you know, all-time greats, and Brett Favre and Reggie White, of course. They should have three because Leroy Butler should be in the Hall of Fame. It's a fucking travesty, isn't it? Although I think, I will predict he's going to get in this year. This is going to be his year. Leroy's getting in. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to be in Canton next summer getting the gold jacket. I'll predict that. I think that they didn't have that, and they weren't like the 85 Bears. Right, another great single-season team. Just quick aside, the 96 Packers would beat the shit out of the 85 Bears if they played in a game. That Bears team, you know, had, like, the Fridge and McMahon, although he was on the Packer team, but, you know, different Jim McMahon. But they didn't have the Fridge or McMahon or, you know, McMichael or any of those. They didn't have, like, a lot of colorful characters. So they kind of get forgotten, but to me, they're one of the greatest five single-season teams in NFL history, no doubt. I've already derailed, so. But that's a fun derail, right? It's a historical Packers derail. It makes sense. Yeah, it's one of the best teams ever. With the win, the 2021 Packers, who we hope have their season end in similar fashion to the 96 Packers. How's that for a transition? remain all alone in first place in the NFC North at 3-1. The Chicago Bears improved to 2-2 as they defeated the Detroit Lions by a something-to-something score. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. 24-14 score at Soldier Field. And I just, another quick rant. There's been a lot of talk about the Bears, you know, being in the news that they're kind of laying the groundwork down. Well, they just bought that property out in Arlington Heights, is it? Suburb of Chicago? To lay down the groundwork. I think they can get out of their lease in Soldier Field in 2026 if they pay the city, I believe it's $84 or $85 million. The Bears belong in Soldier Field, right? Like, I went on a thing about this on Twitter the other day. I know Bears fans, I can't imagine if you're listening. Bears fans don't give a fuck what I think. But the Bears, Soldier Field always felt like the perfect setting for the Bears, didn't it? You know, right on the lake. You got the skyline as the backdrop. When it was cold or rainy or windy or snowy, like, I don't know, it just all kind of fit. It just felt like that, this is where the Bears should be, you know? And obviously the stadium's lost a little bit of its luster now that they've remodeled it into something from like a Steven Spielberg science fiction movie or something. But it looks like a goddamn spaceship is what it looks like. But to me, the Bears, they should be in Soldier Field. You know, the team of Dick Butkus and Mike Singleton, they didn't play in a suburb. Come on, man. That's just my take. That's just one Packer fan's take. I don't know all the ins and outs and the nuts and bolts. I'm too lazy to learn them. I think the Bears should be at Soldier Field. That's just my opinion. You know? The Lions, I've already derailed twice now. The Lions, of course, remain in dead last as a result of the loss at 0-4. The Vikings are now in third place at 1-3 after a 14-7 home loss to the Cleveland Browns. Now, if you didn't watch it, I watched almost all of that game, and I can assure you it was thoroughly boring as shit. But the Vikings lost, which is what we always want. Correct. Before we get into the fun, God, I hope you're having fun already. Got to do the social media. Got to do all the shameless self-promotion, which I know you love or at the very least tolerate. Twitter, LempsMKE, at It's Just Chris Now. Facebook, Old Bag of Donuts, OL Bag of Donuts. The email, olbagofdonuts@gmail.com. For anyone listening on the wonderful Packers Talk iTunes page, leave a rating, 5 stars, 4 stars. Those are awesome. Super rad. Leave a comment if it's positive. Would love to hear it. If it's negative, you know what? Leave that too. I can handle it. Leave that shit too. Right? What's the... In honor of David Lee Roth, who just announced his retirement on Friday after a long and assless chaps-filled career. What did he famously say? If you love it, tell a friend. And if you hate it, tell an enemy, because I'm still going to be here tomorrow. And for anyone... And then we're on Spotify. You can find us by searching for Packers Talk. Look for our logo, the head of the Vince Lombardi statue, which sits outside Lambeau Field. We're on the iHeartRadio app, too. So look for us there. And hit subscribe. We, the podcast dealers, will then deliver the shit right to your house. You don't have to make any shady phone calls at 3 o'clock. Hey, man, Lemps, you got that podcast? You just hit... The nut, you just hit subscribe and we deliver it right to you. That would be what I would recommend. Okay, now that we done got that out the way, let's go. Let's dive right in. Let's talk about this Packers dub. Not quite a dub like last week's thriller over San Francisco. Like I said in the opening, more of a B, maybe B plus level dub. Like an 85 or 86% dub. You know what I mean? Like some professors or teachers give that a B. Maybe some nudge that towards a B plus. It all kind of depends. So we'll say BB plus. A solid win, right? Where do I begin? I want to talk about the offensive line again. I got to start by talking about the offensive line again. I don't even want to say makeshift offensive line, because that has like a negative connotation. Makeshift sounds like you're holding this thing together with duct tape and chicken wire. That's what we thought initially, but this offensive line is, they're gelling, man. They are playing fantastic football. Right, left to right, Yosh Nijman, John Runyon Jr., Josh Myers, my son Royce Newman, and right tackle Billy Turner. What a group, what a performance, again from that group. Getting it done in pass protection, gotta say pass pro so people think you're extra smart, and run block. I mean, they were outstanding today. Right? Let's talk about the pass protection. Now, Rodgers was sacked 3 times, and he was hit 5 times. But, you know, some of that came later in the game. Like, when the game was still competitive, they basically had given up 1 sack and, or was it 2 sacks and 2 quarterback hits? And then so you factor that in on top of last week when they gave up one sack and two QB hits to San Francisco against two really good front sevens. Pittsburgh's front seven was healthy today. They had TJ Watt back. You know, their front seven isn't quite as good as San Francisco's, but it's a damn good. Those are two damn good front sevens. This new look offensive line has faced in 2 weeks, and they have just done the job. Again, whether it's protecting Rodgers or opening holes in the ground game, they wore, I mean, we talked on the show last week about how they slowly but surely wore San Francisco's front down. Today, the Packers had 131 yards rushing on 33 total carries. I mean, just awesome stuff from that group, you know? Adam Stenovich, I didn't praise him, I don't think, as much as I should have last week. Offensive line coach slash run game coordinator, Adam Stenovich. He has just done an outstanding job with that group. You know, outstanding job in getting these guys in, figuring out where they need to be, developing them. Because you remember, a lot of these guys they draft, they don't even know when they draft them where they're going to play. Right? Like, I remember when Runyon was picked, I think Runyon was primarily a right tackle at Michigan. He's kicked inside to guard, and the Packers, you know, so they've developed him there. Royce Newman was a guy, played all over the line at Ole Miss. The Packers, even when they had drafted him, I remember John Eric Sullivan. I can't remember his title in the organization. But saying that he wasn't even sure when they picked him where he was going to be. Said, we got to get him in here with, you know, Coach Stenovich and kind of have them talk to him and see where he fits. They get these guys, and I give credit to Brian Gutekunst too, because he's done such an outstanding job in identifying this talent and getting it in those middle rounds. Now, Myers was the second round pick. But Newman was a 4, Runyon was a 6, Nijman was an undrafted guy. These guys, I mean, he's done an incredible job of identifying talent. And then giving it to Stenovich, who does an incredible job of developing that talent. Figuring out the right role, the right position, and developing them. It's an outstanding job. You know, how Ted was with wide receivers is kind of how Gutekunst has been with offensive linemen. That seems to be his money position. And you could certainly have worse positions to have as your money spot, you know? That's because it's, to me, it's the most important position on a team other than quarterback is offensive line. I think most people would agree there. He's done an outstanding job. I got to say, I personally don't know if Stenovich is going to be in Green Bay much longer. I've said that a couple times last week if you follow me on Twitter. I could see a scenario where Nathaniel Hackett leaves and takes a head coaching job somewhere. And then if the offensive coordinator job opens up, Stenovich slides into that. But if Hackett is still there next year, I would be surprised if I would think so. He's on a lot of radars. I can guarantee you that. After what this offensive line has done these last 2 weeks, really his whole time in Green Bay, but particularly these last 2 weeks, he's popping up on radars, you know. Because again, he's not just the offensive line coach, he's the run game coordinator. So someone I predict, if Hackett is still the offensive coordinator, Stenovich will be somewhere else as an offensive coordinator next season. For sure. Yeah. The Packers are lucky to have him for now, which is the most important thing, right? And, you know, I talked about Nijman a little bit on Twitter after the game. I do wonder, you know, when Bakhtiari comes, this is looking down the road a little bit, when Bakhtiari comes back, Jenkins will be back. Doesn't really seem to be a spot for Nijman. Right? It doesn't seem to be a spot for him, for Yosh on the line. At least now. And, you know, teams are always looking. There's always a bunch of teams that are looking for a left tackle of the future. Could he be a potential trade piece for the Packers? Definitely something to keep an eye on, I think, after the season. I'm going to have to think about it now. Just file it away for later. But I'm just throwing it out there now on October 3rd. He could be a guy that teams might have interest in. You know, someone asked me on Twitter, could he be an option at right tackle if they were to move on from Billy Turner after this? And I definitely think that's possible too. But he's going to be in the mix either in Green Bay or somewhere else after the season. I think it's trending that way. Definitely. Again, just file that away for later. And when you have an offensive line playing as well as the Packers offensive line is playing, and then you factor in two really good running backs in Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon, now you're cooking with evil gas. And those two backs were outstanding Sunday. Outstanding work from Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. Now, Jones, it was kind of a, you know, kind of a by land and by air a little bit, I guess you'd say. Jones doing more of his damage catching the ball. But we'll go through his stat line. 15 carries, 48 yards, 3 catches for 51 yards. So 18 touches for 99 yards for Jonesy, which is, of course, outstanding. And then A.J. Dillon was, now he had a quiet first half, didn't do a whole lot, but was a huge factor in the second half. And he was outstanding. Probably his second, no, what, this was his second best game as a pro, other than the Sunday nighter in the snow against Tennessee late last year. 15 carries, 81 yards for Dillon, added in one, tossed in one reception for 16 yards. So 16 touches for 97 yards. So both of those guys right around 100 yards total. When you're getting that, and you're getting the offensive line playing that way, I mean, the offense is humming. It's humming. Thought those guys were great. How great was it to see Dillon unleashed in that second half? He's such a factor. You know, the Packers had the time of possession advantage at the half, almost 18-12. So they're already starting to wear down the Pittsburgh defense. Now imagine you're on a tire, your defense, you're starting to get worn down, it's not going your way, and then you see AJ, you see that beast just getting slammed into the line over and over. I mean, who wants to tackle that? Does anybody want to tackle AJ Dillon? No. You know? And one thing I really liked was that LaFleur started using him today, I think really for the first time, in a lot of short yardage situations, a lot of third and ones, you know, third and twos. Though it felt like he had two or three of, at least two, if not three or four of those carries today. And he always got the first. He complained last week that he didn't get the ball and was it the fourth and goal? The fourth down that Green Bay went for it in the first half against San Francisco and didn't get. And I think everybody was pissed that they didn't give the ball to A.J. Dillon there. Maybe LaFleur is starting to learn now, because that was a big mistake last week that almost cost them. This week, he didn't screw around. Short yardage situations, I'm giving the rock to AJ. First down. Move the chains. Perfect. Love to see it. You don't have to overthink this shit. It's not rocket science, for God's sakes. It's football. And I actually think the Packers could have run the ball even more than they did against the Steelers. It felt like they got a little pass happy at times, and whenever they did, again, like last week, and really all season it's been the case. Whenever they get too pass happy, the whole offense kind of bogs down, and the operation isn't as crisp. It doesn't work as well. This offense you saw today, let me get to that. Because when they did pass the ball, now I got to give some love to the old dog. When they did pass the ball today, the star of the show, Randall Cobb. How cool was that to see Randall Cobb have the big day he did? 5 catches, 69 yards, nice yardage total, and 2 scores. Really making his impact felt for the first time in this, his second stint with the Packers. Today was really Randall Cobb announcing that he is back and he is still going to be a factor for this offense in a good way. It was great to see. And he's still, you know what, I guess hadn't really seen it yet. It was nice to kind of get confirmation that he's still got some juice in those legs. His first touchdown catch, nice work from the offensive line, giving Rodgers time, allowing Cobb to gain separation from the corner on the crossing route. Rodgers hit him and Cobb, but Cobb turned it upfield and had enough juice to sprint that into the end zone. That was really great. I definitely was cackling in a good way after that. That was awesome. And then a second touchdown, Rodgers with the quick rollout, quick flip to Cobb right near the pylon. But still, I mean, it was awesome to see Randall Cobb. You know, if you're like me, I think a lot of people were like, when we first heard the news, oh, Rodgers wants to come back, but one of his terms is that they have to get Randall Cobb. It was like, what's going on here, Randall Cobb? What's happening? Where are we? It was definitely kind of bizarre and surreal at first, but it's starting to feel more natural seeing him back in a Packer uniform again. It's just great to see him have the big day he had today. That was awesome. And Rodgers hit a milestone today, right? As a result of his 2 touchdowns, he reaches 420 passing touchdowns for his career, tying Dan Marino. That's a fucking crazy number, because I was at, now Adam Summers and I, my old Bag of Donuts podcast co-host, we were at the game in 07 at the Metrodome when Favre passed Marino. You know, at the time it was like, oh my God, 421 passing touch, which of course is a lot. But it'll make sense in a minute here why I say that. It's like 421 passing touchdowns. Oh my God, how could anybody get that many? And here we are, just about 14, it's almost 14 years later to the day, I would think. And what, now as a result of Rodgers hitting that mark, we now have, well, he hasn't passed Marino, but when he passes Marino, is it six guys will have passed Dan Marino at that point? Right? Brady, Breeze, Manning, Rodgers, Favre, and Rivers. So six guys will have passed Dan Marino when Aaron Rodgers throws his next touchdown pass. Which, it's still an insane number, but this, I mean, it just kind of speaks to the offensive explosion, the passing game explosion that's gone on over the last 15 years or so in the game. These marks, it seemed like, you know, well, I'm sure, I'm sure somebody will pass Favre eventually. If you had told me on that day that 14 years from now, you know, five other guys will have joined Favre and passing or just about to pass Marino, I'd have been like, no, that's crazy. And one thing I hope is I hope the younger generation, it doesn't kind of dilute how good Dan Marino was. Because Dan Marino was a fucking killer. You know, I just hope kids don't see that number and go, well, what is that? He was good, but he wasn't as good as... No, Dan Marino was the shit. Dan Marino would cut your heart out, no question. Get off my lawn. So that was cool. And I think today was the best. This version of the offense we saw today when they weren't getting too pass happy, when they have that bout, this is the best version of the Green Bay Packers offense. It may not put up the eye-popping... I mean, they had 27, which is a lot, but I mean, like, you know, like last season they were hitting 35, 40 points a lot. They may not put up those gaudy point totals, but it's the most lethal, effective, efficient version. It's the best version of this offense when they've got that run-pass balance. Yeah. You saw it today. When they had that balance going, Pittsburgh had no answers. That's a good defense. You know, Watt, Hayward, Fitzpatrick, they had no answers for this offense. That's the best version of the Packers. I'm just going to keep saying it. Don't get too far away from the run. And particularly, don't get too far away from Aaron Jones. Come on, Matt. Come on, Aaron. Just remember that. It's, again, not rocket science. The defense, overall, I would say the defense, it was a solid effort. That first drive was a disaster. There's going to be more on Jair in a minute. Jair giving up the touchdown pass, although I do think in hindsight, you'd see the photos in the replay, that should have been offensive pass interference because the guy did push off. But Jair getting burned for his second touchdown of the year, which is as many as he gave up all of last season. That was tough to see on the opening drive of the game. After that, the defense, you know, rebounded and really only gave up 3 points the rest of the way. That last touchdown was in garbage time. I don't pay too much attention to that one. But yeah, only really 3 points after that. So it was solid, and I don't want to, you know, throw too much cold water on it. Ben Roethlisberger's cooked. He's washed up. Yeah. Yeah. He can't move in the pocket. Now, he was never Michael Vick back there, but he could move. And the thing with Roethlisberger was he was so big and strong and he could move and he was hard to tackle and he could make those plays. And he had that accuracy even when he was under pressure. It's all gone. It's all gone. He can't move in the pocket anymore. He's just a big statue. And all those years of injuries, he's not really that hard of a guy to bring down anymore for these front seven rushers, you know? I mean, Rashawn Gary brought him down. Rashawn Gary was able to reach. Now, this speaks to Gary's freakish ability, but he was able to reach around an offensive tackle and grab Roethlisberger and bring him down. Again, great play by Gary. I'm not downplaying it. Great play. But you would have never done that to prime Ben Roethlisberger. Never. He is, I mean, it was for real. It was 2010 Brett Favre vibes all day I was getting from Roethlisberger. He's washed. He should have walked away at the end of last season. Yeah, I predict this will be his last year in the pros. I don't think I'm going out on a limb on that. So it's, you know, and then not just that. I mean, he was wildly inaccurate. He was missing high. He was missing wide. He was throwing balls in the turn. I mean, he was all over the map. He just looks completely cooked. So I don't want to say, it was a good effort from the defense, but I mean, Roethlisberger's washed, so, you know, it's not, you know what I mean? It's not throw too many bouquets at the defense. Because there were throws, I mean, a competent quarterback, I mean, there were throws, there were guys open. And he just missed them. A competent quarterback will not miss those throws. So, you got to take the defense's performance with a huge grain of salt when you think about it that way. And just, I got a weird offensive game plan from the Steelers, too. That kid, that rookie, what's his name, Najee Harris? Man, he is a beast. He's going to be a superstar in the league, you can tell. He's fast, he's big, he's not afraid of contact, he can catch the ball. I'm surprised they didn't make him more of a weapon out of the backfield. I mean, six catches, but felt like they should have gone to him more. Yeah. So, weird game plan from Pittsburgh and you know, Roethlisberger looking cooked. It's hard to put too much stock into what the defense did. Now, having said that, there were some good moments. I talked about Gary Sack, which was incredibly impressive and had me again cackling on my couch. I talked about Eric Stokes. Eric Stokes officially ended the game with the interception late in the fourth quarter. His first pick, his first NFL pick. That was nice to see. I tell you, I like Stokes. I like him. Was it perfect today? No. It was certainly an up and down day. But here's what I loved about his performance. He never backed down. You know? Things went well. Things went poorly. He had the same mentality every single snap. He battled. And he was aggressive. And I love that, you know? Because the talent is there. Right. And then it's just, he's got to, obviously, you know, he's got to refine his game and hone it. But with that, with his raw talent and his mentality, the Packers got a player, you know. Now, how much can he hone his game and refine it will determine how much of a leap he can take. But I think they've already got a pretty solid, at worst case scenario, his absolute floor to me is solid number two corner. And I think his ceiling could be quite high. Yeah. Now that you know, obviously will not be determined for quite some time. But just loved his mentality. And he kept battling, never backed down. And he was rewarded with his first NFL pick. That was great to see. Love that. Kingsley Keke. Welcome to the 2021 season, Kingsley. Great moment from him. Was that the first? Man, I got my notes here. That was, okay, so early second quarter now, 7-7 game. Third and six at the Pittsburgh 30. Keke just bullies his man. He just, go back and watch it. He just bullies his man into the backfield. Knocks the ball out of Roethlisberger's hand. Kenny Clark falls on it. Packers take over at the Pittsburgh 23. They end up scoring on the aforementioned first touchdown from Rodgers to Cobb that made it 14-7 with 10:55 to go in the half. Keke needed that play, man. He needed that play in a major way because he just hadn't, I mean, you could put him on a milk carton. He was missing. Nobody knew where he was all season. And it was nice for him to finally show up and announce his presence with that play. Hopefully he can build on that and get going because they don't really have another pass rusher on that offensive, on that defensive line. Like Kenny can get after the quarterback. Kenny can do everything. How about his play? I don't even remember when it was today. When Harris ran, he got into the backfield. They collided. And like I said on Twitter, I go, Harris was running. Then he hit Kenny. Then he stopped running. What a play by Kenny. I think it was a loss of two on that. That was an awesome play from Clark. He can get after the quarterback, but they don't really have anybody else who can. So it was nice to see Keke. Hopefully he can be that guy, that pass rushing compliment to Kenny Clark on the D-line. Devondre Campbell continues to be a solidifying presence in the middle of it. He's really kind of tied. He's like the rug in the Big Lebowski. He kind of ties the room together. He's tied a lot of that defense together. And I think the strides they've made, I think, have largely been due to his presence. Which is something we've been talking about for years, people like me, if you listen to the show. A good inside linebacker, surprise, does that. 9 tackles. One pass defended, one quarterback hit. You know, guys, he'll give up plays, but the thing I love about Campbell, he'll give up plays, but they don't rupture into these huge gainers. He'll give up a completion, but he tackles a guy right there. Okay, you can live with that. He's really been kind of tying this defense together. It's been really nice to see. And then I talked about Kenny Clark's play. Kenny's just a beast. He's having a really, really great season. Now, the biggest thing the biggest negative from the defense, of course, the injury to Jaire Alexander. Suffered a shoulder injury late in the third quarter on a, he was making a tackle on, I believe it was Harris. What was it? Was that a third down, fourth down play? I can't remember what it was, but you know what I'm talking about. He got hurt trying to tackle Harris. So, probably should have made the old Deion Sanders business decision on that one in hindsight. Because he got hurt, and he was down for a while, and then he came off, and then he was getting carted off. Was it Mike Garofalo, is his name, from the NFL Network, was saying that he was diagnosed with it's an AC. The early diagnosis is an AC joint injury. That's all they know for now. They're going to do more tests to determine the severity of it. Hopefully it's not bad. No, I'm not a doctor. But I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night. That's such a lame joke. But I looked up AC joint injuries after the game, and it said that those, what is it? It said sometimes it can be a week. This means nothing, but it said you'll feel better. The people who suffer them will feel better in a few days to a week. But I think it said it can take up to 6 weeks for the ligaments or whatever to fully heal. Hopefully it's not that long. Again, I shouldn't even say this stuff. I shouldn't even try to play doctor, but that, it's not having him would be big. Yeah. He's, to me, if you include Bakhtiari being healthy, he's no worse than the third most important player on the team. I think he's the second most important player on the team. It'll be hard for them to survive if he's out for long. Boop, boop, got to keep it real. I don't know if people fully understand, I think a lot of people, maybe some don't, how much he changes the complexion of how an offense attacks the Packers. He essentially shuts down one side of the field. Like, teams just don't throw his way. Now, he's given up a couple of touchdowns this year. But even after that, even after he gave up the touchdown to Johnson on Pittsburgh's first drive, they didn't really go after him much. Teams, just, it changes everything. And now with him out, if he is out for any significant amount of time, now the whole field opens up for opposing offenses. That's a problem. A corner group of his, you know, I like Stokes, but Stokes, Chandon Sullivan, Kevin King, who was out today, but I would think would be back soon. And then Isaac Yiadom and Shamar Jean Charles. That's not... That doesn't inspire a lot of hope or confidence, that group of corners. You know, Jaire was, again, like he, you know, he tied the group together. It's just going to be hard for them to survive for long. You know? Someone said, well, they're playing, someone said to me on Twitter, well, they're playing Cincy and the Bears in Washington. So nice. Yeah, but even when you look at teams like the Bears in Washington, it becomes a lot harder to defend them if there's no Jaire. He's to me, he's the best corner on the planet. No worse than the second or third best corner on the planet. So, yeah, fingers crossed, you know, prayers up, whatever you want to say. Just let's hope that he's not out long because they need him. They need him bad. One thing the Packers don't need, another good transition, nailed it. A punter. I'm ready to say it now. 4 weeks into the 2021 season, I will say it. I feel comfortable enough to say it. The Green Bay Packers have a punter! Yeah, the Packers have a punter. How about that? Corey Bjorquez. Man, what a shrewd move that was for Gutekunst trading. Was it a sixth and they got him and a seventh back? Whatever it was. It was 100% worth it because this kid can really boom the shit out of you. He had a 57-yarder today, three punts, 46-yard average, one punt inside the 20. 57 yards. He doesn't give returners a lot to work with. Which is, it's like, I thought that was illegal or something. Was that, I thought it was against the rules to have a punter who could do that. But this kid does it. It's great. Really? Oh, is this what it feels like to have a good punter? Oh, I'm like Ricky Bobby. I don't know what to do with my hands. Young Ricky Bobby, when he wins his first race. I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do with my hands? I don't know. I'm just excited. Now, things are not all rosy on special teams. The field goal blocking units have repeatedly... This is becoming a thing now, especially on the right side of the line. They almost... Crosby's kick in San Francisco last week almost was blocked. They had the block in the first half. today. That, of course, was called back because Pittsburgh was offsides. More on that in a minute. But it's becoming a thing now. And they've got, and Mo Drayton's got to get that tightened up. Because that could cost him. It almost cost him today. In a major way. They've got to get that tightened up. Yeah, absolutely. So still some issues, but having a punter covers for a lot of that, doesn't it? That's nice. Having a punter and a field goal kicker that you trust, this is a good thing. I like this. I don't quite know how to feel. I'm still processing how good it feels, but yeah. Now, the big question was Pittsburgh offsides on the field goal block. I don't think so. I know people were saying, was it three guys removing? It didn't look to me. It was close. I could see it going either way. I kind of didn't think they were. But I certainly wasn't mad at the refs for calling it. And, you know, after the one-sided officiating last week that screwed Green Bay repeatedly, I'll take it. And the referee sure made sure to get Green Bay back later in the game, didn't they? By not calling the trip on TJ Watt. On, was it the second and goal play? That was the Packers' first drive of the second half. Ended up in a field goal. The first drive of the second half. Field goal made it 20-10. Let me double check my notes on that. That's right, isn't it? This is fascinating. Yeah. Didn't call. Now, here's what pissed me off about that. They called that last week on Adrian Amos, didn't they? They did. So why don't they call this on Watt this week? You know, Collinsworth said during the game last Sunday night, he goes, they almost never call tripping during the season. Okay, fine. But if you're going to call it against Amos, then you have to call this against Watt. I don't care if it's different refereeing crews. You have to be consistent on this shit. LaFleur was obviously furious about it, and I don't blame him. I was too. I'm sure you all were too. That was really... So yeah, the refs, you know... The Packers got a break on that, but then they got screwed again, didn't they, on the tripping call. So, again, calls tend to even out. I'm a big believer in that. Calls tend to even out over the course of the season. You'll have weeks where you get boned and weeks where you will bone, so to speak. So, you know what I'm saying? It all evens out. Okay, big picture time now. Twitter questions. Then big picture. I asked people to submit questions on Twitter and email, and people did not disappoint. It's going to be kind of a long one tonight, but whatever, right? We're all having fun. Three in a row for the Packers, right? So were there any... Let's check the email. Any email questions? Nope. Email box is empty. Nobody loves me there. Definitely got a bunch of Twitter questions, though, and comments, so let's get to those right now. The first one... Hang on one second here. All right, my computer is acting goofy. Okay, here we go. These are in the order. They're in no particular order. Who am I kidding? First question comment comes from Justin Cornwell, friend of the show at Justin A. Cornwell. He writes, there isn't much to take from the defensive performance since Big Ben is so washed. But the run defenses look good the last two games. I'm back to being fully confident in the offense. They move the ball almost at will against tough defenses in back-to-back weeks. Yeah, and I think a lot of that, I agree with you, Justin, and I think a lot of that is because of this new look offensive line has played fantastic. I mean, look at, you know, I could go back to talking about Nijman again. He faced Nick Bosa last week, and a lot of snaps today he was lined up against Watt, and he just did the damn job. Yeah. I'm back to being fully confident in the offense, Justin, when they dedicate themselves and stick to being balanced. Yes, then I am fully confident in them. When they get back to Rodgers playing hero ball, not so much. But when they stay balanced, yes, I am fully confident in the offense. And I agree with you on the defense. It's, you know, Roethlisberger's washed. The run defense? How did Harris end up doing today? Was it? 62 yards on 15 carries. So, yeah, it was decent, you know. I'm still concerned about the run defense. I'm not going to lie. That's probably always going to be a concern of mine all year. But yeah, overall, I agree with what you're saying for sure. Our next question comment comes from Dave at _Dave and then a whole shitload of underscores. It's a lot of underscores, Dave. He asks, should the Pack trade for defensive help using one or second round? First or second round pick, I assume he means. I'm not there yet. Now, get back to me after Jair's injury, though. Because if he's out for an extended period... If he's out for an extended period of time, it's going to be hard for this team to do what they want to do. Yeah. They need him healthy. I wouldn't say that, and I assume you're obviously referencing to Za'Darius Smith. The news last week that he's going to have back surgery and will be out for a while. The whole best case scenario is that he's back for maybe the end of the regular season in the playoffs. Back injuries are tricky, even the recovery, who knows. So I assume you're talking about specifically outside linebacker, edge rusher, and corner. But you may even be talking about defensive line too, because they certainly need help there. Should they do it? I'm not there yet. It's my long-winded way of saying I'm not there yet. The trade deadline isn't until November 2nd. They've got some time still to figure out if what they have is enough. But if, if one of these if the injury to Jair is bad, or if it looks like the pass rush is really struggling without Z, and we get to late October, it's something they may have to consider. This is the problem with going all in. You know, when you go all in, you can't say, oh, well, we're a little deficient in this one area. We could upgrade at the trade. Like, oh, we got to hang on to these picks. Like, they've committed themselves to be, you got to commit. I'd say maybe. Put me down for maybe right now. I hope that made sense. I want to see how these next few weeks look, but it's definitely something they may have to consider. Yeah. We move on. Next question comment comes from Brew Crewer. Oh, my old pal, my old Bag of Donuts podcast co-host, Adam Summers. Brew Crewer at @asummers_time writes, enough can't be said for how good this line has been. Starting two rookies, essentially another rookie with Nijman. Yeah. And then he has the mind blown emoji. Yeah. Yeah, buddy, I agree with you. You can't. I mean, that's why I let off with it when I really got into the show, was that they, it's hard to overstate how good they've been. You know, Runyon was a 6th-round pick. He's in his second year. Myers, 2nd-round pick, rookie. My son Royce, 4th-round pick, rookie. And then Nijman. So really, you could say 3 rookies and, you know, almost essentially a rookie in Runyon. So, and the biggest thing too, how excited are you for the future with this group? With Runyon Jr., with John Runyon Jr., again, second year guy, Myers rookie, Newman rookie. There's a youth movement, and these guys can all play. You add Bakhtiari to the mix and Jenkins. They totally redid their offensive line on the fly, and they're not going to miss a step. They might even be better. Who knows? It's impressive. Again, just you can't credit Gutekunst enough and Stenovich for what they've done. Next question comment comes from Philip Voss at @P_Voss. Nice to hear from you, Philip. When they mix in run, pass, and spread the ball, this offense is as difficult as any to defend. Defense played well. Injuries becoming a major concern. Division stinks. Just win the North and find your identity. Yeah. I mean, I talked about that obviously a couple times already in the show, that when they stick to being balanced and don't throw 72 targets all at Devontae, yeah, they're a hard team to defend. I know that might sound crazy because, you know, Devontae and Rodgers played so well last week, but I think this offense is better when Adams isn't getting targeted for. I mean, you got to target him a lot. I don't know, how many times was he targeted today? 11? That's about right, 11, 12. You don't want to get him up there 15, 16, 17 targets. That's too many. You got to spread the ball around. Spread the ball around, stay balanced. I'm with you there. The injuries are becoming a concern. Yep. Yeah, and the division certainly does look like it's a shitty division once again. That's going to be kind of the thing for this team is, you know, try to get healthy. And just, I think at this point, it's only 4 weeks in, but it feels like it's going to be one of those years where just kind of keep winning as, you know, however you can, and just try to get guys back healthy and have all your planets line up for the playoffs as far as health goes. That's going to be kind of the plan, I think. That's the way it feels anyways. Next question comment comes from Matilla the Hun at Matilla D. Hun. He writes, those three are big too. Oh, he's talking about what I wrote for asking people for comments. A division win, we'll skip ahead. A division win and against two quality defensive opponents. Green Bay needed to win the first quarter of the year just to keep pace while waiting for 69 to come back. Now they have a tiny cushion with a couple of weaker opponents coming up. Still a ton of work to do. Yeah, they certainly did. They certainly won the first quarter of the year, which didn't kind of seem possible after that week one stinker. I think a lot of people were worried, were they going to be 1-3 at the end of the first quarter? And they're 3-1, so that was great the way they could that worked out. Yeah, a little cushion, but, you know, Jair's injury, it certainly gives him way less of a cushion if he's out again, if he has to go on IR, which... that's the way this feels to me, is that he's going to have to go on short-term IR and miss 3 weeks. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know if I'd say... I certainly wouldn't say since he's a weaker opponent. I think that's going to be a game, more on that towards the end of the show. But yeah, I think, you know, the Bears in Washington, yeah, a chance. But then you look at the end of the month on that, they got to go on a short week to Arizona. And Arizona's 4-0. They just demolished the Rams today. So they got a couple of weaker opponents after Cincinnati, but it's still going to be tough, especially, again, with these injuries. And yeah, they have a ton of work to do. I agree with you. And then our final question comment comes from Kevin Hankart II at Hankart Jr. Ooh, a new question. A new question comment poser. So that's always cool to see. Kevin writes, as I watched the second half, I couldn't help but feel this team was ready to give the game away. Offense looked okay, but it seems like Pittsburgh's offense was pretty bad. More so than our defense was good. Sure hope Jair's back quick and ready to go. Go Pack, go. A win is a win. Yeah. I don't know if I would say that they were ready to give the game away, Kevin. I kind of see what you're saying, though. I think they knew. I think they kind of knew. Once they got it to 20-10, early third quarter, I think they felt, you could sense this, like, they knew they were just better than Pittsburgh. And it was like, you're not going to beat us today. So they eased up off the gas quite a bit, which you don't really love to see, but it's early in the year against an AFC team. They've had some injury stuff. The Packers, I mean. So I don't know if I'd say give the game away, but it definitely felt like they put her in cruise control for a lot of that second half. Because, again, I just think they knew they were better than Pittsburgh, and there was no way they were going to actually lose that game. That's kind of the way they were carrying themselves, it felt like. Yeah, Pittsburgh's offense is pretty bad. Roethlisberger is cooked. I definitely think... I agree with you, it was more of a case of their offense and him in particular being bad than Green Bay's defense doing anything outstanding. I'd agree with you there. Yeah, and let's hope Jair's back. And a win is a win, you know, and that's important. I kind of think, again, if Alexander, I hate to keep coming back to that, but it's kind of the dark cloud looming over the win today. If he's out for any significant amount of time, a win is a win is going to kind of have to become the motto until they can start getting pieces back. Because, you know... You can't lose the caliber of players the Packers keep losing and put up these pretty wins. They may have to rack up some ugly ones, too. Which, to paraphrase paraphrase all dirty bastard, there we go, tongue-tied. Ugly wins are still beautiful anyways. All right, big picture time now, 48 minutes in. Oh, my God. This is going to be a long one. The Packers have reached essentially the quarter pole of the 2021 season. Always a good time to take stock of where a team is or isn't. So where are these 2021 Packers right now? In many ways, they are right where the 2020 Packers were. Offensively, they are still among the league's best. They have playmakers, a new look but still trending towards excellent offensive line, and of course, one of the best to ever play running the show. After leaving you no choice but to wonder how invested he was in the operation at the start of the season, Rodgers has since dialed in and is playing at an elite level once again. When they put the focus on being balanced and getting everyone involved, they are truly lethal and nearly impossible to defend. When they lose that focus on balance, they make things exponentially harder on themselves. There have been improvements on defense and special teams, mostly due to reinforcements brought in during the offseason. In a shocking development, bringing in players who are better than the ones you had make the team better. And both units have provided some reasons for optimism. Both units, however, have also provided evidence they may be lacking, either in terms of talent or scheme or both. In other words, they are still largely where they were last season. When solely examining the three units that comprise these 2021 Packers, you come away again feeling much like you did last year. You see a team that has flaws, but a team that is definitely capable of going very deep in the playoffs. Of course, having a great season requires more than that. You have to stay healthy. And the one area the 2021 Packers are already showing they are vastly different than last year's team, and indeed the one that came before that 2020 squad, is injury luck. And not in a good way. Green Bay, who entered the year already minus perhaps the league's best offensive lineman in David Bakhtiari, has since seen Za'Darius Smith, Elgton Jenkins, MVS, and now Jaire Alexander fall to injury. It is still week four. Hopefully this trend ends soon, but right now it is showing no signs of slowing down, and at this moment, it seems it will be the thing most likely to stop the music prematurely, ending any hopes of a truly fulfilled last dance. Okay, that just about wraps up this episode of Lemps Talk and Pack. I hope you all had as much fun listening as I did recording it. As for when you'll hear from me next, at this point I'm not totally sure. So next Sunday, as I've mentioned on the show previously, I think, is my birthday. And not just any birthday either, it's my 40th. I'm officially going to be over the hill, so that's fun. Of course, the Packers are playing in Cincinnati next Sunday, and as of now, I may be going to the game. I'm still not sure yet. Maybe, maybe not. It's probably going to come down to the wire. If I do go, there's probably no way I'm going to do a show until I get back on Monday. So in that case, you won't hear from me until Tuesday. But if I stay home, I'm going to do the show as scheduled next Sunday night, which you'd hear Monday morning. I'll probably be drunk for it because, fuck it, it's my birthday. But I'll still do it. Should be a good game, too, whether or not I go. Since he surprised a lot of people with its start, the Bengals are 3-1, tied with the Ravens and Browns first in the NFC North. In a weird twist, I've seen quite a bit of the Bengals this year. Watched them against the Vikings and the Bears, and then Thursday night against Jacksonville. Joe Burrow is definitely starting to show why he was picked first overall in 2020. I think he's big time. I think he's eventually going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Yeah, really, really like Burrow. And they've got weapons too, man. Chase looks like he's going to be a stud. Mixon, Boyd, and their defense is playing well. So don't get it twisted. This will be a test for the Packers, who have weirdly struggled against the Bengals during Rodgers' tenure. I don't know if people realize this. They're only 1-2. Rodgers is only 1-2 against the Bengals, with the win coming the last time they played back in 2017. But even that one at Lambeau, that went to overtime. So they've weirdly struggled with Cincinnati, yeah. And of course, I'll be back to recap that one at some point. Win, lose, or draw, whenever it is. So keep your eyes and ears out for that. I'll definitely keep you posted. So until next time, whenever that may be, I am Chris Lempesis. This has been Lemps Talking Pack. Thank you so very much for listening, Packer Nation. I love you, I love you, I love you. Stay safe out there in this crazy world, and remember, always and forever, go Pack.